Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Worldview, it's the show. We don't have time for a long introductory music, and we don't take any calls. No pressure on you. It's the holidays. Kick back, relax. I'm not on vacation. I'm working for you. We also don't tolerate sponsors, so you won't have to deal with rude interruptions trying to sell you products. No beds. No eye creams. No, none of that stuff. Instead, we'll talk about the news. Ruth Bader Ginsburg. What?
No PJs.
No PJs. No, what are they called? Anyway, the PJs, the footies, and the hoodies, and all that. No. Did Ruth Bader Ginsburg remind you of that, or you already said that? Because she doesn't remind me of the... I mean, I don't think of PJs when I think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. What I think of is decaying flesh on the bone. Of an evil, evil woman, proving once again that God is merciful. They removed a cancerous lesion from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who herself is something of a cancer on civilization. If you go back and look at her record, you know that she was the chief counsel for the ACLU before Bill Clinton appointed her 25 years ago. To the United States, for 25 years, she's taken her radical left-wing agenda from the ACLU and inflicted it upon the rest of us on the U.S. Supreme Court. Bill Clinton deserves eternity in hell just for that. Just for that alone. Along with Ruth Bader herself. When they're both roasting in the fires of hell, they'll have each other to thank. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is not frying in the fires of hell this weekend. Proving that God is merciful. That's all. All right. Ruth is off the table. I've gotten that out of my system. When I saw that, well, I'm not going to get into how I felt when I saw that she was in the hospital with cancer, because that might scare people. All right. What else is going on? You want to hear something terrifying for the millennials out there? This is scary stuff. This is from the Seattle Times, as you might expect. Let's see. Britain's Royal Statistical Society named this past week its Statistic of the Year. Indeed. The Statistic of the Year this year shall be 90.5% children. 90.5% is our Statistic of the Year. They say that is the proportion of plastic waste that has never been recycled. That's right, and that makes the International Statistic of the Year from the Royal Society scaring all the millennials. They're going to be jumping out the windows. Let's see, based this 90.5% of plastic that's never been recycled is based on the work of U.S. academics Roland Geyer, Jenna Jambeck, and Kara Lavender Law. They've been working hard to study how much plastic was never recycled. And it turns out, for about the first 75 years of plastic, none of it was recycled at all. Because we hadn't thought about that. And now we are recycling it. They say that awareness of the problem of not recycling plastic has been growing. No kidding. I've noticed that awareness about recycling plastic has been growing. And they cite David Attenborough's documentary, Blue Planet 2! Which showed sea turtles shrouded in plastic, among other horrors. The horror. The horror of the plastic. One of the researchers said he was honored by the accolade, that is, receiving the British Royal Statistical Society's International Statistic of the Year. Well, I was honored by the accolades, honored with a U, by the way. It will help draw attention to the problem of plastic pollution. that impacts nearly every community and ecosystem globally. It's a horror. And I'm an American. I'm so scared I've got a British accent. Terrifying. All right. Do we all have an appropriate level of millennial angst now? Fear of the future? Just riddled with guilt over the fact that we're choking the oceans on plastic straws? So I've set us all up for a wonderful show. Now everyone feels horrible about just being alive. Except Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She doesn't feel horrible. She has no guilt whatsoever. All right. Or she feels no guilt. She has guilt. Don't get me wrong. She just doesn't acknowledge or feel it. What else? What else here? Here we go. Do you wear any clothing with your favorite college team on it? You have any of that stuff? You know, the big Texas tea, or the A&M for the Aggies, or let's see, what other college teams can I think of? Virginia Tech with the VT. Anyway, all those, do you wear any of those? Well, here's a story from the Associated Press, Dateline Hotan, China. They talk about the manufacturing facilities where these college team sportswear is made, surrounded by Dobermans, razor wire, locked gates. That's right, because it's actually prison labor in China that is generating your college's favorite sportswear. Yeah, they're sewing. I had an email exchange with an associate of mine when we were discussing some of the parts for one of the devices that we work with, some of the parts are made in China, and he went to China, and he had an opportunity to tour the facility, and he said it was truly depressing. He said the workers on the factory floor appeared to be slaves, and they were terrified all the time. And he said it was just a very oppressive environment where you could feel the sense of suspicion and discomfort and impending doom all throughout the factory. Well, see, he went there to try to fix a few things. There were things that weren't going right, problems with the parts. And he said after the first day, he was scared to tell the supervisor anything else for fear of what might happen to the workers. He said, I didn't want to even say anymore. So for all I know, he's taking them outside and whipping them with a rubber hose. He said it was awful. Anyway, and so all of us have something from China probably on our body right now. Well, the AP talks about these internment camps. There's an estimated 1 million Muslims being detained after the Uyghurs. You know, the Uyghurs started with their terrorist attacks against the Chinese, the Uyghur Muslims. And so the Chinese have just cracked down with just stupefying crackdown, throwing entire communities in jail, basically in these internment camps. And now that they've got all these slaves and prisoners in these internment camps, they now call them training centers, and they're making sportswear that they ship out to Badger Sportswear. Badger is a leading supplier from Statesville, North Carolina. And they supply sportswear for all your favorite big-time colleges. Yeah. And so, when those Uyghur terrorists started blowing stuff up there in China, I wonder if they realized what they were about to do to pretty much every Muslim in the region in China. They're all in prison now. And I, you know, I'm not a fan of Islam, right? If you've listened to the show, I'm not a big cheerleader for the prophet or the fake, phony, satanic, evil religion that he created. But I don't think that their people should be just wholesale imprisoned. And certainly not forced to work for nothing as a slave. But that's quite common in China. Even the free people, based on my limited interaction, even the free people there are something of something like slaves. And now we go to robots. All you millennials who want to march and demand a $15 minimum wage, listen up. The robots are on the way. Yes. In fact, this CNBC has a really interesting story this past week about farming robots. Now, I did not know this, but a recent survey of farmers in the California, the Central Valley, more than half of the farmers surveyed said they had experienced employee shortages. Not enough people to pick the peppers and the fruits and the vegetables. Not enough people. So anyway, there's several companies that are designing robots. One of the companies designed a robot called Sweeper. And it has a camera that recognizes the color of a pepper and decides if the fruit is ripe for picking. How about that? And the robot, by the way, can work about 20 hours a day, never shows up stoned, never calls in sick, and never complains. Now, they do break down on a regular basis, and it takes
so
about...
What's that?
So are the people. Yeah, they don't break down as often as the people, but these are just prototypes. I mean, a lot of the people that you're working with these days, most of them are finished products. Most of them. Some of them still have some room, and I'm willing to cut some of them some slack. But anyway, it takes this pepper-picking robot 24 seconds to spot and pick a pepper. Yeah. And so the thing is that time will come down. It actually cuts the pepper with a blade and drops it in a little basket. It's really cool. Yeah, I don't know if I can pick a pepper. Thing is, I wouldn't know if the pepper was ripe. You have to teach me that. Anyway, it's got LED lights. It can work day and night. But the robot only has about a 60% accuracy rate for picking ripe fruit. And so that matches the average score on the average quiz at the average high school in America. So the robot's already got one up on the high school graduates. And be closing it. They go on. Oh, they've got a tomato picking. One kid's company's working on a pepper picking robot, right? They've got another company's working on a strawberry picking robot. And there's another company they mentioned here working on a tomato picking robot. Now, from the outside looking in, you would wonder, why can't you just have a picking robot that picks various things? Well, apparently it's not that easy. So you focus on... This is the thing. See, we'll start out with a robot to pick each fruit. And 50 years from now, we'll be like, can you believe we used to have three different robots to pick those three different fruits? Now it's all in the macrobot. He picks everything. Anyway. And the $15 an hour minimum wage, we'll laugh about that too. Those children had no idea what was about to happen to them when they started demanding $15 an hour and the robots started making all the burgers. And all the shakes, and picking all the fruit. They say that there could be commercial versions of these harvesting robot farmers. Well, we can't really call them farmers, but just harvesting robots available in 3 to 5 years. That's pretty interesting. The agricultural robot market is expected to reach $75 billion by 2025. Wow. And that's just one little niche industry, $75 billion. Isn't it amazing how you meet somebody and you ask them what they do for a living, and then they tell you something that you never even knew existed. You had no idea that field, that people could actually earn a living doing that, and you'd never even heard of that. And it turns out their industry is actually bigger than your industry, and you never even heard of it. I tell you, the division of labor is phenomenal in the amount of prosperity and opportunity that it creates. It's truly something to see and to witness. All right, now before we take a break, I've got to ask a question, and I don't want to insult anyone, and I don't want to hurt any feelings, but I watched Fox News. Last night I watched Fox News, and I watched CNN. Why? Because I'm some sort of masochist. I don't know why, but I found myself, and I just have to ask, has Laura Ingraham made an announcement that she is officially transitioning to a man? Is what's going on with her and her face? I mean, there's just something. I'm just going to throw it out there. Is I'm worried about Laura, okay? And so I guess you can just color me concerned, okay? That was really scary. I haven't seen her in a while, you see? And okay, so there. And then second, when did Rick Santorum become addicted to OxyContin and start working on CNN? That guy looks like he's sleeping through the five-window panel, and he does the slow-motion blink, and then all of a sudden they come to him, and he wakes up, and he's semi-coherent, semi-coherent. And so anyway, when it comes to Rick, when it comes to Laura, just color me concerned. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. I got what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the action. Doug McBurney, thank you for sticking with us. And, you know, I just thought about it that if, now if Rick Santorum overdoses, I'm going to look like a real heel. Just a really, really insensitive, rotten human being.
You're worse than the
Megadeth. That's right. Worse than, can't remember his name. I was going to make a funny joke there. I'm a worse person than Dave Mustaine. That's the Megadeth guy. Yeah, go look him up if you want some entertaining. Oh, man. All right. Anyway, we hope that Rick Santorum does not overdose, become another statistic in the opioid epidemic. But, man, does he look. Wow. All right. Okay, so, and that actually leads me right into this story from our science file where some people are claiming, according to CBS in Philadelphia, some people are claiming, and medical doctors, by the way, are claiming that infusions with younger blood from teenagers into geezers can reverse the aging process. Okay, so number one, color me skeptical on that, okay? Reverse the aging process? I think that might be a bit of an overstatement, as is quite common in that particular industry, trust me. Now, this one particular doctor in this story, Dr. Jesse Carmazin, Dr. Jesse, we'll call him, or her, could be a her, is running a clinical trial where people pay $8,000 to get the rich growth factors found in blood's plasma platelets. And now most people, they do that from themselves, but this is getting it from other people, from younger people. And Dr. Jesse plans to open a business selling youthful blood.
Come get some youthful blood. This will reverse the aging process.
He says his patients who've had the young blood transfusions feel amazing. And he says he's seen evidence of reversing the aging process in rats is where he's seen. Now, how you measure that, I don't know. You look at the wrinkles around the rat's eyes. Look at his joints, test for inflammatory environment. I have no idea. This sounds like a bit of hype around this, but, here, platelet-rich plasma, PRP treatments using a patient's own blood have been in demand as trendy vampire facials to fight wrinkles and as joint and tissue treatments to accelerate healing. Anyway, folks, there's some truth to all of this because our immune system is amazingly powerful and it has the ability to produce proteins that can cure virtually any disease and heal virtually any injury to tissue. So There's some truth to it, but for this particular story, there's very little truth to it. But there is some. By the way, what do they say? Oh, transfusions are considered safe. Side effects can include hives, lung injury, or potentially deadly infections. But you'll feel, according to Dr. Jesse, you'll feel fantastic. You know, I envision a day. In fact, Ruth Bader Ginsburg made me grab this story. The story about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Because I foresee a day, if something doesn't change dramatically in the moral equipping of the next generation, if something doesn't radically change, then I envision a day when old people will actually eat young people. Not just blood transfusions, they'll actually eat them in order to stay young. Yes, now I know, I'm talking about this happening literally. Now, this has happened before. In many advanced cultures where the elites, I mean, literally eight parts of babies, and it's all happened before throughout history on a number of occasions. And I know that something like that is already happening figuratively through the Social Security program and the pensions and the Medicare. I know that we're already devouring the fortunes of the young. Well, I'm not, I hope. I probably am, and I don't even know it. I'm probably part of some government. They're probably subsidizing something I do, and I'm not even aware of it. That's how bad it's become when we're all participating in the crime, and we're not even aware of it sometimes. Stealing all the young people's money. But I'm talking about the old people, and I'm talking about the millennials. When they start geezing up in their 70s and 80s, I just don't see what restrains them morally from eating babies to stay young. Anyway, as gross as that sounds. And they'll have a Ruth Bader Ginsburg will be their moral touchstone as they devour the body parts of children in order to maintain their youth. All right. Ruth Bader Ginsburg out. All right. We had another volcano. The son of Krakatoa erupted. It's killed about 200 people so far in Indonesia. Pretty dramatic video of a band playing a gig and a wave just comes through and boom, they're all gone. It's pretty astonishing video if you've had a chance to see that. It seems to me that there are more volcanoes and earthquakes and tsunamis. It seems to me. But it could just be that we hear about them more often and there's more people in their path. But it also could be that there's just more of them. And it's scary. I personally am scared of earthquakes. They scare me. And volcanoes. And I'm not irrational about it. So there. I've revealed to you one of my deepest, darkest fears. Uh-huh. I'm afraid of that super volcano in Yellowstone. I think about it often. And hopefully it's not, hopefully I'm just overly paranoid. But let's move now from, now that's a hard science. There's no arguing with the seismic impact. There's the plume of volcanic ash and fire and smoke going up into the air. That's real science. Now it's time for science. Really? From the aforementioned science. Really, vile? Yes. We've got a new study. Let's see here. Data has been collected as part of the Center for the Health Assessment of Mothers and Children of Salinas in California. Uh-huh. It's Chamacos. The Chamacos study. Did I turn the reverb off? Is that my own head doing that? Okay. Anyway, we've got a new study, data collected, and it's been published in the Journal of Human Reproduction. Yes, this is a real study, and they're trying to figure out why is it that girls, over the past 20 years, girls specifically, and possibly boys, have been going through puberty earlier and earlier and earlier. Why does that seem to be happening? Scientists, by the way, have linked the early onset of puberty with greater risk of mental illness, breast and ovarian cancer in girls, testicular cancer in boys. Precocious puberty, they call it, which is early onset puberty. They say that it causes social trouble for girls, including a heightened tendency toward risky behavior. And so these researchers out in Salinas, California, at the Center for the Health and Assessment of Mothers and Children, have set out to find out why is this happening. And they have decided that they think that it's chemicals in the shampoo, the toothpaste, and the soap, is what they think, right? Girls exposed to common chemicals found in shampoo, toothpaste, and soap may hit puberty earlier, even if their only exposure... Now, listen to this. This is where I got a little skeptical. Even if their only exposure is through the products their mothers used while they were pregnant. Now, okay, I'm not a scientist, okay? So I obviously can't come and present any conflicting data. But just color me skeptical. The study was led, by the way, by researchers at UC Berkeley. So there's the second reason I'm skeptical, is because a bunch of hippy-dippy, neo-hippie children, potheads and drugged-out whack jobs at Berkeley, lesbians and freaks and piles of homos and just deviants of all variants and sorts, led this study. And the lead author, Kim, said, quote, Kim. Quote, we need to know how these chemicals are, like, affecting our health. And while more research is certainly needed, personal care products may be disrupting the hormones, like, in our bodies. Unquote. That's what the lead researcher Kim out at Berkeley said. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so now what about, has anyone thought about this? Let me just throw this out there. What about TVs, movies, music, and the internet all proliferating pornographic images into the minds of young boys and girls? What about that? Has anyone thought about that? Is it possible that could have something to do with the young kids hitting puberty earlier and then having all this heightened tendency toward risky behavior? And you know what that means, don't you? That's a very collegiate way of saying that they sleep around a lot. Risky behavior, that's what that means. You know, they get high, they go to parties, and they sleep around. They become promiscuous. But no, the out at UC Berkeley, they're convinced that the problem is shampoo. And it might just be the shampoo that your mom used while you were in utero. And it creeped down through her endocrine system and then invaded your hormonal system. And next thing you know, you were sleeping with the hockey team in ninth grade. I'm sorry. I color me skeptical on this one. That's all. I think that our culture is saturated with hypersexuality. I mean, you can watch a commercial for the hoodie footy PJs, right? And it's borderline pornography. I mean, you would have had to go to a special theater in Greenwich Village in the 50s to see that kind of thing. And now it's on every television all the time. And it's streaming across the internet, and it's getting into the minds of the young people. And it's not only messing with their minds, it's messing with their bodies. Yes, there's something affecting the hormonal balance of our children. And I think the least of our concern is the toothpaste and the shampoo and the soap. put those guitars away. It's time to get back to the show. We have serious news to get to. So things that need to be talked about and things that some people might be afraid to talk about, but we're not here. At the Weekly Worldview, we take on issues that make other people queasy. We take them on, head on. For example, right here out of the Fat of the Land file, I said the Fat of the Land file, researchers at the University in Ontario, Canada, are studying what makes chickens happy. That's so you know that you are in a prosperous land when you have researchers who make their living studying what makes chickens happy. And it turns out it's not that easy to figure out. Mm-hmm. So far, the researchers' best means of deciding or determining the happiness level of a chicken is, how well do they scramble over a barrier for food? How skittish they seem? And whether or not they play with a fake worm. If a chicken... Now, scrambling over a barrier to food, that could determine how hungry a chicken is. I don't know about how happy a chicken is. Anyway, but I'm glad we're studying what makes chickens happy, because how many chickens do we have now, he said, to his extremely attractive audio engineer.
About 40 chickens
we have here at the McBurney compound, and we want to make sure they're happy. And if there's a researcher out there who can point us in the right direction, we're always happy to take instructions. Our chickens seem to be happy. Now, listen to this. In recent years, according to this article from Kansas.com, one of the researchers says, in recent years, the animal welfare world has moved beyond looking at how to minimize suffering in animals to exploring whether animals can also enjoy their lives. And that's a daily exercise we have here at the McBurney compound. Is trying to ensure that the animals not only survive, but that they're enjoying themselves. And let me tell you, now we don't have PhDs here at the McBurney compound. Well, we have a post hole digger. Yeah, my daughter says she has a PhD. And she's put it to good use on a number of occasions. By the way, we have a borrowed post hole digger. And a spud bar. I'm feeling guilty now. I think we've had that in our garage for like 2 years. Oh, yeah. I got to return that post hole digger. All right. Note to self. Don't steal your uncle's post hole digger. Return it. Okay. Now, the unofficial research here at the McBurney compound indicates that one thing that makes chickens happy is climate control. Yes, heat in the wintertime specifically at 5,800 feet. It makes a big difference in the happiness level of chickens. And I can tell because every morning they scurry over barriers for food as we release them from their climate-controlled coop. Yes, climate control. But here's the thing, is climate control can present a problem in and of itself, not for the chickens. The chickens got no worries. But for the humans, because it appears, at least here at the McBurney compound, that some genius ran every wire going outside of the house to all these different locations on one circuit. And so now, the humans at the McBurney compound have to hire an electrician to come and find out why is it that our bedroom has almost burst into flames twice. We took an outlet out of the wall for the second time, and it was all melted and misshapen. It was like out of a Salvador Dali painting, and it stunk of just burning plastic. And it's just by the grace of God that our bedroom did not burst into flames. And we have isolated the problem to the exterior circuitry that was installed on an amateur level by some previous occupant here at the McBurney compound. And so now we have to hire an electrician. Now, here's the thing, folks. There are few things that leave you more vulnerable in life than having to hire an electrician. It's a scary thing Because electricians, number one, they're not cheap. Number two, they're really expensive. Number three, they charge a lot of money. And number four, you have no clue if they're ripping you off or telling you the truth, because electricity, let's face it, it's a mystery to all of us.
And they could find
it's more. A mystery. Oh, and that's the other thing. They start looking and they say, oh, well, not only do you have a problem here, but, well, you know, you're lucky that the kids' room hasn't burst into flames and the attic could burst into flames at any moment. That's right. They start finding, I'm terrified now. So if anybody out there knows an honest electrician that I can count on who won't rip me off, please send me an email. And like that. Because I have a friend who's an electrician, but he's my friend, and I don't want to annoy him by saying, hey, can you come over to my house and do some really challenging electrical work? And the whole time I'm obviously expecting you to charge me less than market rates. Could you do that for me? No, I don't want to do that. And plus, I don't want to have a friend of mine come over because he happens to be an electrician. And then something goes wrong in the future. He feels horrible, right? The room bursts into flames 2 years later. He feels terrible. Or we're not happy with the work. Now it affects the friendship. You just don't want that. What you want is a neutral party who both of you respect each other. But you hope to find someone who won't rip you off. All right. So there we have it. I'm scared of tsunamis, volcanoes, earthquakes, tornadoes, hail, and electricians. I'm actually not scared of electricians themselves. It's electrical problems that scare me. All right, so that's it on that front. What else do I have here? Oh, yes, I mentioned the millennials earlier. And that if something doesn't radically change in the moral equipping of the next generation, that, well, it's going to be ugly out there. And I was following the events at Gatwick Airport in England through the week. Apparently, someone has been flying drones into the airspace and scaring everyone so that at Gatwick Airport, they canceled over 1,000 flights during the busy, busy holiday season. And I'm wondering to myself, is this Islamic terrorists running like a dry run for some sort of drone attack? Could be, right? Or is this bored, spoiled, 20-something gamer millennials just messing with society? Which is more likely? I would say the latter is the most likely. And we will find out at some point. They will find out who is it flying the drones, throwing them one of the major airports in England into lockdown, canceling thousands of people's flights. It's just been a thing is I travel, and I can imagine how horrible that would be, sitting on a plane for 4 hours, not knowing if you're going to take off or if a drone is going to blow up your plane. That would be, so anyway, my prediction is, and I'm just playing the odds here, is that it's spoiled, bored, millennial gamers. That's just, it's not Ahab and Mohammed who want to, you know, I think so. That's, well, we'll see. All right, now, let's move on. The big, the two big political stories of the week that they woke up. Rick Santorum to comment on there on CNN in between nodding off there were the justice reform package that has apparently, it's been signed by the president, I guess, and the government shutdown. The government, oddly enough, it shut down on Sunday, and it was already shut down. So that was interesting. They announced the government shutdown. At the time, the government was actually already shut down. And so that made, at least that smoothed out the transition into shutdown phase. If you're going to shut it down, it's best to do it while it's shut down. So, anyway, but so the government shut down, we just don't care. We just don't care. We never believed Donald Trump was going to build the wall anyways. And we know that the establishment, deep state, the whole, the Republican Party, the Democrat, none of them want a wall. Because I'm convinced they're all making money off the drugs. And, you know, I don't have any evidence of that. But I'm convinced that the only reason you would leave the border open like that, with people dying, both Mexicans and Guatemalans, they die in the desert. They drop like flies. People in our country are being killed. It's just a disastrous situation. There's no way that our governing officials would leave that situation in place the way it is unless they were making money off it somehow under the table. Back, I'm telling you, they're making money on the drugs. Some of the highest officials in the country, none of them, I don't believe, in the White House, but some of the highest officials in the government are making money off drugs from Mexico. That's all. And that'll all come out eventually. If there's another reason, I cannot even begin to contemplate what it is. I know the Democrats want voters, but what they want more is money. And so there, I've made my accusation. Perhaps I'll be arrested. I don't. I was just giving my opinions of what it was, officer. So I got a ticket. I got a traffic ticket. So I'm on the way to an appointment, and I'm running a little bit late. It's going to be close, right? And I come to one of the left turn arrows, the left turn arrow, which is the bane of my existence, is the left turn arrow. I don't know why they can't just let me decide if it's safe to turn left. If there's another car coming, trust me, I won't do it. But if there is no car coming, why do I have to wait for that red light? Well, I know. Apparently we've all agreed that we're going to. So anyway, I swung through just as the red light changed from a certain shade of green to red, something like that. Anyway, I was in violation. And there just so happened there was a cop right there who watched me. Woo! He pulls me over. He says, "What was that all about?" Which to me sounds like kind of a smart aleck comment. You know, it's not like he said, "Sir, I observed you running that red light. Is there a reason you did that? Like, are you crazy? Are you taking your pregnant wife to the hospital?" I don't know. But he said, "What was that all about?" So I said, "Well, you know what, officer? I was in a hurry. I took a calculated risk. Obviously, it's not working out." And that was it. That was the last words we said to each other. He went back to his car. He wrote me the ticket. He brought it up. He says, "You got any questions?" I said, "No, sir. Can I go?" He said, "Yes." I floored it. No, I didn't peel out or anything. But believe me, I hustled my way. Anyway, I got to my appointment then about 10 minutes late. Oh, yeah, and then today we saw, have you ever seen this now? Talk about pucker factor. We saw the light turned yellow, and we saw the car next to us and the car approaching in the oncoming lane both decide they were going to beat the light. And the car next to us was turning left. And they missed each other by a hair's breadth. Mm-hmm. It was, it made our heart jump up into our throat.
That's why
I will not do that anymore, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. And especially when I got the family in the car, I won't do it anymore. All right, now we're going to talk about criminal justice reform. That's what, see, I mentioned criminal justice. That brought to mind that I was in violation of the law this past week, and I'm fully prepared to pay the penalty, which is some amount of money that I have to pay. And then the government will say, "Well, it's okay, we're not gonna, we'll act." In fact, I could go to court and I could plea bargain into lying about what I did and then pay a little bit less money, believe it or not. But I don't think I'm going to do that because I feel bad about it. And I feel the best way to acknowledge my guilt is to just pay the full penalty. And plus, I don't have time to go to court. I'd rather just pay them some amount of money and just get on with my life. All right. In the meantime, the Senate, bipartisan support for the First Step Act. So we know that something bad has happened, because both the Republicans and the Democrats supported it. And it was written by Jared Kushner and Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka. They wrote this prison reform bill, criminal justice reform, written by two of the most liberal heathens in the history of the country. So you know something bad happened here. This new, it's called the First Step Act. It's right out of an Orwell novel. It establishes an entirely new risk and needs assessment system. Uh-huh. Okay. Does that mean Jared and Ivanka are going to find some of their relatives' jobs in the federal government? Hey, we've got a new risk and needs assessment system that needs to be managed and operated, and it needs to be put in place and administered is what it needs. We need administration. Start calling up their shiftless, worthless relatives. The Bureau of Prisons, according to this article from The Hill, the Bureau of Prisons will have authority to reduce sentences imposed by judges. And they will institute programs. Of course, programs. What do we need? Programs. We've got a crime problem. We need programs. Academic ethics classes, life skills classes, personal counseling, vocational training. You know, all the stuff that they already have in prison. Now they're going to set up a whole new layer of bureaucracy to organize it and more efficiently administer a program that already doesn't work. But a whole bunch of worthless people who would probably die of starvation will now be able to make a meager, pathetic living administering the first step system courtesy of Jared and Ivanka. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. It would have been better if I'd have waited until the solo started, right? I don't know what I'm thinking about. I was trying to get to this. So the new justice, criminal justice reform, the Javanka bill, I'll call it, Jared and Ivanka, it basically makes it possible so that everyone can get out of prison in about half their time if they get with the new program. Criminals who commit treason, terrorism, or use biological or chemical weapons, human trafficking, female genital mutilation, and assaulting members of Congress will not qualify for sentence reductions. Nor will they qualify for speedy, painful executions, which would be the actual criminal justice reform we need, but instead they'll just go on with the current program. Now, drug dealers, if your drug dealing did not result in death or serious bodily injury, will be eligible for reductions in their sentences. Heroin and methamphetamine dealers who are leaders or organizers, they're excluded from the possibility of participating in the Javanka early release program. Second and third level dealers. So who's going to analyze this and figure out what type of dealer is this guy? I don't know. Probably got to be on drugs to figure this whole thing out. What we really need is to just institute the three basic forms of criminal punishment that God told us about from the very beginning of the beginning. Restitution, corporal punishment, and capital punishment. That's it. Forget about locking people up. Anyway, but who's going to listen to me? I'm not Ivanka Trump. She's some kind of genius. Jared Kushner, he's gonna give us peace in the Middle East. What right do I have to? All right, let's move on. From the decline and fall file, Donald Trump has announced that we are withdrawing from Syria. And that upset so many people that he announced that we're going to withdraw from Afghanistan. And then military leaders started resigning and spitting in his face and throwing shoes at him and leaving the White House. And now you've got a genuine split in the faux conservative media universe where all the warmongers, they want us to stay. And then the reasonable, sound wise people want us to stay in some places, go in others, and do this and that. It's just a disaster. So here's the thing about Syria and Afghanistan, frankly, is that it's disastrous that we were there, Syria specifically. Because we're in Syria, we're literally fighting to install one group of Islamists over another, both of whom want to replace an evil dictator so that they can kill all the Christians and other religious minority. That's why we're that's effectively what we're doing in Syria. In Afghanistan, it's just disastrous that we're still there 18 years later. It's just, frankly, it's embarrassing that we couldn't button that thing up and get out of there. But we haven't. And so it's a disaster that we're there. The only bigger disaster is that we're leaving. And so this is the kind of position one finds oneself in when one assumes that there are limited options from which you must choose. It's just like this argument I just had with this bozo on Facebook. He's defending Donald Trump's serial adultery, basically just saying, look, none of you people cared what Bill Clinton did and blah, 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 and Donald Trump, what he did, paying off a hooker, that's not illegal anyway. And I said, you know, you've become a shill for serial adultery. And one of his friends accuses me of being a Democrat. And I said, look, I didn't vote for the Democrats. I didn't vote for Trump. You know, he said, look, we only had two options. And see, that's why he's a fool. Because you have another option. You have the option of doing what's right. And for example, in Syria, we had the option to do what was right, which was go in and destroy the Islamists and create a zone and set up our own government there, predominantly dominated by Christians and reasonable people. We could let some Kurds and some Yazidis in there, but none of these Muslims. No, you're not going to be in the government. Get out of here with that. If you want that, if you want to live that kind of life, you're going to go out and you're going to live it in the desert like an animal. Because we're just not going to have that in civilized society. We're not going to have Islamists in the government, not one, none. And if you want that, you can't live here. And that's what we should have done. And we should have done the same thing in Afghanistan. But we can't, we don't, because we don't have the moral authority. We don't have the... We don't have the wherewithal any longer. And we, frankly, we don't have the... We have the moral standing, I suppose. I mean, how many innocent children are murdered every day in Afghanistan by their mothers? I'll bet it's not 2,000 a day. No, I'll bet it's not 20. How many Syrian Muslim mothers are aborting their children and killing their children? I guarantee it's not as many as we are. So it's a pretty sad state. And when you have fallen to the level we have, you end up with a situation where it's disastrous that we're there, and the only bigger disaster is that we're leaving. That's what happens. Now, let's go back to better times. In the so-called War on Terror, The Sun reports how a British Army sniper once killed six terrorists with a single bullet. Yes, he was a lance corporal in the Coldstream Guards, and he hit his target from 930 yards away. In Kakaran, Afghanistan, the same sniper who killed six terrorists with a single bullet, on his very first deployment as a sniper and his very first shot, he killed a Taliban machine gunner from 1,465 yards away. Which, that's an impressive shot, okay? And then after that, how do you top hitting a machine gunner from almost 1,500 yards away? Well, you fire off a single bullet that just so happens to hit the trigger of a suicide bomber's vest, exploding and killing everyone around him. Now that is a fun day at work if you're a sniper. And that had to be pretty cool to watch. By the way, he was a British sniper, by the way. But now we move into the decline and fall file. So we go from some of the best news of the week, how you killed six terrorists with one bullet, to some of the most disturbing news of the week, and it comes to us again from the British military. The British military has officially decided to abandon what they call gender-specific titles. Yes. So the term rifleman will be discontinued because it includes the word man. Yes. No longer will riflemen be referred to as riflemen, but they will be called combat soldiers or infanteers. Yeah. Infantry soldier is another option. The British Army is right now recruiting females into the combat units. And so far, how many have... Let's see. None of the 9,000 females in the British Army have asked to transfer to a combat unit as of yet. But in preparation so as not to offend our female compatriots, we shall eliminate gender-specific terms, and we will all become gender non-specific in order to win the wars. To win any of the wars that the crown demands of us, we are prepared to go gender non-specific. That's pretty sad. There you go. That is from the Decline and Fall file. And now we move from there to the New York Times. The New York Times, where Todd May, a professor of philosophy, I tell you, at Clemson University, writes in an article, the headline is a question. Would human extinction be a tragedy? Question mark. Well, Mr. May, I would say in your case, no. But for me, in my house, yeah, we're not. We think that would be tragic if humanity went extinct. But Todd May, professor of philosophy at Clemson, writes a whole article in the New York Times about the prospect of human extinction. Given the increasingly threatening predations of climate change... Scary terror, all the plastic straws. Oh, the humanity. He says, would human extinction be a tragedy? He says it may well be that the extinction of humanity would make the world better off. And yet it would be a tragedy. And then he goes on with a much more bloviation about generally nothing about how awful civilization is. Western culture, modern technology, and pretty much everyone else except him is horrible and rotten. And we're all too greedy, and we eat too much, and we breathe too much. Anyway, he says it may turn out that it is through our own actions that we human beings bring about our extinction. What a self-centered, arrogant man. To assume that, well, you know what? If we all follow you, Todd May, it's, mass suicide could be just around the corner if we all take your advice and feel as guilty and pathetic as you do. But me, myself, Mr. Todd May, get out of here with that. Take it back to Clemson, right? I can't even believe I let him on my show. Get off my show. All right. Now, finally, ladies and gentlemen, this is shocking. Are you familiar with London Breed? London Breed, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. London Breed is not a new designer jeans. No, it's not a club. That's the mayor of San Francisco. The newly elected mayor of San Francisco, her name is London Breed. And it turns out she committed perjury in her brother's murder case. 13 years ago, she testified that her brother was sleeping innocently on their grandmother's couch at a time when it was later proven that he had robbed a burger joint at gunpoint, pushed his girlfriend out of the car on the Golden Gate Bridge, where she was fatally struck and killed. And she said he was sleeping on their grandmother's couch. Now, this has all come to light because she recently submitted a letter asking Governor Jerry Brown to commute her brother's sentence since her perjury didn't work. Now she has the nerve. Her brother's been in prison for nearly two decades after being convicted of murder of his girlfriend. At the time, innocent Miss London was living on Treasure Island, and she routinely stayed over at her grandmother's house. Why? Because her grandmother raised London Breed and her siblings. Why? Because London Breed's parents abandoned their children. So this is another bastard child in high office. Just like Barack Obama. Did you know Bill Clinton, a bastard child? Barack Obama, bastard child. This London Breed and her murderous brother, a couple of bastard children, abandoned by their parents, and they're now in high office. And she perjured herself in front of God and everybody. She was asked by a defense attorney whether she was lying to protect her brother, and she answered no. When it was so obvious to everyone now that she was lying. She says, no, I grew up in the worst projects in San Francisco, and I have always been a person of integrity. I work really, really, really hard to develop a reputation of integrity. All right. So, London, if you work hard, you should leave out the really, really, really. Three reallys about how much integrity you have might lead someone to believe that you lack a certain amount of integrity. All right, there we go. The bastard mayor of San Francisco is a perjurer in a murder case, and she should be arrested for what she's done, and she shouldn't be given access to Jovanka's sentence reduction plan. She should be punished to the full extent of the law, and not the law in San Francisco. No, I think more of the law in Exodus. Thank you very much. All right, that's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at American Right to Life and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview studios. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.